As someone who teaches audio storytelling, I meet a lot of students who say they want to start a podcast. I mean, a lot. Many of them hope to produce a series about some aspect of their life, something personal. But before you even dip your toe in the water, you need to hear what happened to Megan Tan and her podcast, Millennial.
And to be honest, I didn't think Millennial was going to do this thing that it did.
What it did was become wildly popular. It was inspiring. I mean, Megan, who'd never produced any audio stories before, she just grabbed a recorder and began documenting her life after college.
You're listening to Millennial, a podcast series about something that no one ever teaches you, how to maneuver your 20s, captured in real time.
So that's the upside to Megan's story. Inexperienced producer rocks podcast. Well, there's another side, a cautionary tale. 2.5 years after she launched Millennial, when the podcast is going great guns, Megan pulled the plug.
So here's this thing that you built with a lot of your own sweat, and you become part of Radiotopia. At the best month you have 400,000 downloads, and you walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many people out there who are making their own podcasts right now would die for that?
I wonder if they would, though. Like, when the thing that you love is grinding you into the ground mentally and emotionally, I don't think anybody really wants that.
This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. I'm Rob Rosenthal. If you use Stitcher to get your podcasts, guess what? How Sound is now available there. Thank you, Stitcher. So at one point, I told Megan I thought starting Millennial the way she did was punk rock. And for those of you who don't know me, that's a high accolade. Pick up a guitar, start a band. Tap into that desire humans have to just make something. But let's start at this point in the story.
I can tell you when I knew I should have ended the podcast.
Episode 38, We Grew Up Here. Here's how it opens.
When are you going to talk to him about selling the house?
I'm in the car with my mom visiting my hometown, Columbus, Ohio, and I decide to address the elephant in the room.
When I get legal advice, I got to get legal advice about our relationship, how to deal with that, and the house. The house is the only thing that we really have that we co-own.
42 years with my father, and it's come down to the house and the things inside of it. In many ways, this is the only thing that's holding them together.
I have talked to him about getting stuff out of there. And this is the only time that you're home, and we have to make time for it to get your stuff. So I know what to throw away of your stuff, what to keep.
What? How long do you think it'll take?
I said, you need to have a 4-hour block.
I haven't lived in my childhood home since high school, about 8 years ago. So it feels like it shouldn't be a big deal. Except that it's more than just a house. When I was little, I thought my family would live in my childhood home forever. I have memories of us in the front lawn when my sister and I would play low-key baseball with this big plastic bat and with neighborhood kids during the summer. I also have memories sitting on the front porch with my mom, watching thunderstorms roll in and counting the seconds between the lightning and the thunder. And in the kitchen, where my father would cook the Chinese food that he grew up with for our family. This is the only home we've ever known. It's where we've all grown up. But now we have to say goodbye.
So that is like an extremely emotional episode for me. It's about my mom and dad selling my childhood home that they've lived in for like 40 years. And me essentially saying goodbye to my childhood, but also like saying goodbye to my family, you know, like this unit. And we were on deadline. And I had to get my mom and my sister in front of a microphone and interview them and have them like articulate things that I needed for the show. You know what I mean? And it just felt gross because I was working on deadline. Like, I was working for a means to an end, and I didn't give myself enough time or space. I didn't feel thoughtful. I just felt like, get it done.
So you had some gaps in the narrative or something?
No, no, no. It's literally like taking the people that you love and using them in order to make content, in order to, like, feed your beast.
Before Millennial became Megan's beast, it was her leap of faith, to use another cliche. Back in 2014, Megan had a degree in photography from Western Kentucky University. She knew how to make pictures and produce videos, but she decided she really wanted to make radio. Well, without any experience, how do you do that? She could go back to school to learn the craft, but she decided against that. She took an internship at Radiolab, and while that was a good start, she didn't produce anything there, so in some respects it didn't help. Eventually she thought, to hell with it. I'll just make a podcast from my closet in Maine.
And it literally was a passion project that I wanted to use to become, like, basically serve as a portfolio for me to get a job in radio.
What made you think you could do it?
Like, I didn't think I could do it. It's so scary.
That fear held her up for a while. She started recording and recording and recording, lots of hours of recording, documenting her day-to-day life maneuvering through her 20s, as she says in the podcast. But in a way, collecting tape, that's the easy part. You're not really making anything.
So how did you push through, I don't think I can do this?
It was literally like I didn't like hearing myself complain anymore. It was like I had reached my own threshold of listening to myself complain and whine and, you know, just be like, oh, I really want to do this thing, but I don't know how to do it. And wah, woe is me. And like, so there's this moment where I literally just put on the calendar, we'll release Millennial here.
January 16th, 2015. Here's the beginning of the first episode.
Growing up, I loved school. Even now, when I walk into an office supply store, I get a rush of adrenaline. The smell of new book bags just trigger these anxious and excited feelings that remind me of getting ready for the first day of school. Yeah, I'm that girl. My mom even laughs about my relationship with school.
Your relationship with school was you were born on that first day. You had a relationship coming out of the womb.
So my mom wasn't surprised that when I was 16 years old in high school, while everyone else was looking at cars, I was looking at colleges. I think it's safe to say that I've been waiting to graduate from college for the past 8 years. And up until this point, I thought I'd done everything right. Internships, study abroad. And finally, here I was.
Megan Altan, Megan Ulati, Honors College graduate.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck. Stephen Bell Kroger.
As I was walking across the stage, I really wanted to enjoy that moment. But I was thinking about where I was going to be in 2 months. I didn't have a plan for life after graduation. You're listening to Millennial, a podcast series that documents something that no one teaches you. How to maneuver your 20s, a period that everyone goes through and that 80 million people find themselves in right now. Each episode will be documenting what it's like to be one of those millennials.
That's the opening to episode 1 of Millennial. It sounds like a first attempt at making a podcast, right? Lots of room for improvement with the writing, the delivery, the production, but still, it's good. It's solid, really. If nothing else, there's clearly a story afoot. Megan has a goal. Figure out her 20s without a plan. Will she make it? How? I mean, that's a lot to work with right there. And once she released that first episode...
When I hit published, I really changed. It was crazy. Like, at that moment, I just felt empowered and stronger than I had felt the day before.
So she made episode 2 and 3 and 4, squeezing in production between her work at a restaurant.
Or at L.L. Bean.
The episodes came out about every 4 to 6 weeks, stories about radio jobs she didn't get, watching her boyfriend's business take off while she languished, interviews with friends and family about all the big questions that 20-somethings often ask about what the future holds. Then season 2, stories about moving in with the boyfriend, a broken down car, finances, more stories about wanting a career in radio. In fact, Megan actually landed a job in public radio, the reason she started Millennial in the first place. But instead of dropping Millennial, she kept it going. Imagine a full-time radio gig with an hour commute each way, plus making Millennial. Of course, that took its toll, and after a year, she quit radio. Yeah, I know. Surprised me too when I used to listen to the podcast. She quit radio to produce Millennial full-time.
Millennial is now my full-time job, which means I need to double my production if I hope to make a living at this. But how hard could that be? But then 7 hours pass and all I've done is answer emails and research how to register Millennial as a business instead of working on an episode. Time is ticking by, and I'm thinking to myself, how did I become my own boss again? Especially because I don't know anything about running a business. You're listening to Millennial, a podcast about what no one teaches you, how to maneuver your 20s captured in real time. When I left my job, I knew that it didn't mean things would be easy. Especially because I'm literally trying to turn a passion project into a real adult business. And I have no idea what I'm doing.
Despite her lament about not knowing what she's doing, there was no stopping Megan. She produced episodes 18, 19, 20. The show was reviewed by The Guardian.
That was crazy.
Sponsors signed on. Millennial joined Radiotopia. Megan hired staff. More episodes were produced, number 25, 26, 27. Her listenership grew, 30, 31, 32. And I should mention, full-time Millennial meant producing a show every 2 weeks. This was not the drop-a-show-here-and-there production schedule of the early days.
I had so much space and time to reflect, and I also had space and time to make it.
Yeah, not anymore. This was the real deal, and she'd created her own beast.
Right. And then the beast is also tied with money. Each time an episode published, it was tied to sponsorship. And so it's like product, money, no product, no money, you know? So.
And then there's Terry Gross, who does it every day.
And how many sacrifices has she made?
Right. I guess what I'm saying is that 2 weeks can feel like a luxury.
Yeah, but not when you're collecting footage of your life and trying to tell a compelling story. Like, making memoir is f***ing hard. Because you have to, like, you're pulling strings from your own life. And then you're trying to find, like, a truth to yourself, but also speaks to the world in a way that makes people think, like, You know? And that is so hard. Memoir is hard. It's like writing a diary for everyone to hear. And that's what ended up happening. Millennial took over my life in a way that was unexpected. And it took over my life on like a double fold, right? Because it is my life. So it's like I was all consumed by it.
And then episode 38 happened. The story about her parents' divorce and selling the family home.
Because we needed content, I forced myself to make this episode when I wasn't ready to make it. Like, I felt like a dementor. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like, what can you give me? Because I have to feed a beast. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm talking about. And they just happened to be, like, people I love so much. But I was, like, taking their life and just like.
My mother and father's relationship started to change. While my sister was growing up, they started to fight. They had big fights where names were called and things were thrown. The kinds of fights that never really get resolved. By the time I was born and I was growing up, their relationship had drifted further apart.
I flipped it through my mind back and forth and back and forth all the time about whether or not he loved me. Why did he marry me? Why wasn't there a sustainability in the relationship?
When we did things as a family, like take trips to Colorado or Canada, my dad didn't always come with us.
Before that, I was like always doing things with him. And the reason was that I didn't want to separate from him. But then if I just did things and followed him, then I didn't cultivate my own sense of identity.
As I got older, nothing really changed. They went to counseling, but it didn't help.
I would facilitate in my mind things to do, directions and ways to go, figuring out, you know, like we could be happy if we did this or if I did this or if we worked together on this or whatever. But it would never play out the way I wanted it to, no matter how hard I would put in that effort. Then there comes a point where you say, okay, this is not working.
Dad made sure that the mortgage was paid and that he kept up with the house. Mom made sure there was love in the house. But when Mom left, you know, you lose something.
About 6 years ago, my mom moved out of the house. It was the first time she had lived on her own in 36 years, and she was learning to pay the bills and live independently. But she and my dad hadn't cut ties. They would still have dinners together. And in a way, it almost felt like they were dating again. Eventually, my mom moved back into the house. And for a while, it seemed like things were okay. But the fights picked back up. And eventually, she moved out again.
I did not want this outcome. This is not the outcome that I perceived. But it's the outcome that was best for my physical, psychological survival and for his.
And that episode is the foundation of Millennial. It's like me taking parts of my life and like turning them inside out. And I used to love that. I used to like feel like I was living on the edge of my life when I did that, because it was so scary. It was scary but satisfying, you know? But with that episode, I felt my body rejecting making it.
She says she listened to her body and gave notice to Radiotopia. Time to stop. She produced 10 more episodes. Then in August of 2017, she uploaded her final show.
As a creator, as someone who just stopped a podcast, I think that each project has its longevity, you know? Like, there is a life cycle with it. And I think that there's a lot of pressure to continue to make something when it is getting a lot of press or it's doing really well, in quotations. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the best thing for you or that's the best thing for the project. So it's almost like it is its own living entity, and living things die. But go ahead. What's your question?
How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Your eyes have welled up a couple of times as we talked.
Yeah, because it's emotional. It's also sad. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's sad. You don't, like, want things to end this way.
Have you listened to that episode again?
No.
How come?
It's really hard for me to listen to episodes of Millennial.
Any of them?
Yeah. I need space.
Megan produced 47 episodes of Millennial in total. And while Megan isn't finished maneuvering her 20s, she still has 3 years to go, she says the podcast was a remarkable companion through much of it.
Millennial is why I am who I am. why I'm able to like walk into a room with confidence. If you asked Lynn Levy what I was like when I was, or even Kelsey Padgett, if you asked either of them what I was like when I was an intern at Radio Lab, I did not talk. Like, I was quiet and I just blended into the background. A millennial not only made me into the producer that I wanted to become, because I made myself into that. Like, I didn't go to any program. I made my own program. Millennial was my project to essentially get me to the place that I wanted to be. And then some.
Megan now works at Gimlet, helping other people produce a podcast.
And to be honest, Rob, like, it is incredibly satisfying for me to be a supporter right now. Like, I can't tell you how nice it is to just be like, I have so much passion and power and experience in like building a podcast, and like I want to be your backbone for you, what you want, because I believe in you, and right now it's your time. Like, it's so much more satisfying than being a dementor, you know, like to be able to be like, let me be your muscle.
I'm not allowed just yet to tell you about the podcast Megan is helping with at Gimlet, but man, from what I've heard, it's going to be a good one. As soon as it's out, I'll let you know at HowSound's Facebook page or Twitter account at HowSound Tweets. If you're not already following HowSound, please do so, huh? I know Megan's story is all punk rock and everything. She just went and did it, and I highly encourage you to do the same thing. But sometimes what you need is some training to get you going. Time away from everything to just focus on learning the craft. If that sounds appealing, then check out Transom's traveling workshops. They're a week long and in some very cool places this summer. Catalina Island off the coast of Los Angeles, Marfa, Texas, Boston, Interlochen, Michigan, and Big Sky, Montana. You can visit transom.org for more details. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. It's produced by PRX and Transom. Thanks to John Barth at PRX for looking over my shoulder, and to WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, the radio center of the universe. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.
And transom.org.